If you don't know the name Bruce W. Talamon, you need to hear this. He's a rock photographer with an amazing collection amassed over 40 years of shooting all the greats. James Brown, George Clinton, Earth, Wind & Fire, you name it. And we got a chance to talk to him before he speaks at the Grammy Museum this Thursday, June 28th.
I'm the first African-American photographer to ever have an exhibition of work at the Grammy Museum. And
how is that possible, Bruce?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, aren't there several other African-American photographers?
Well, yeah, but...
From that era?
Well, yes, but this book, this Taschen book is an interesting thing because that, you know, there have been books done on rock and roll, there have been books done on jazz, but there's never been a book done on R&B, soul, and funk music. A photo book, okay? You know, photo books.
Right.
And then on top of that, and we researched this very carefully because I couldn't believe it, but at the same time, I sort of knew all the usual suspects who were out there when I was photographing.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a side note, it is a book that's put together, an archive that's put together by an African-American photographer, and that's that who shot all the usual suspects. I mean, I knew guys in New York who did a little bit, but they didn't do everybody. And I, you know, for 10 years, I basically photographed everybody from Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5 when Michael had a little round nose, which I got to say, a lot of your viewers and listeners today might not recognize.
Right.
The Earth, Wind, and Fire, Parliament Funkadelic, Rick James.
Isaac Hayes.
Isaac Hayes was the first R&B photograph that I ever shot. The Watt Stacks Music Festival that was held in the Coliseum.
How did you originally get into photography? Because this was, what, the early 70s?
I bought my first camera in 1971 when I was in college. I was on an exchange program, and I bought my first camera in Berlin. And I actually was on my way to being a lawyer.
Really? That's quite a departure. I bet your parents were concerned.
It was quite a departure and quite a shock when I announced that after I had come home that I was going to become a photographer.
What was the reaction from your parents?
My father did not have charitable things to say about me. Let's just leave it like that.
Yep.
In the end, though, he got it. He understood. He supported it 100%. I think before he died, he was actually very supportive and very proud of what I was able to accomplish because I became a storyteller and an archivist, you know, as far as musical photographic history.
Absolutely. How do you get into that world? Because you can't just say, I want to take your picture, Isaac Hayes, and then everybody, you have to gain their trust, and this takes time. How'd you...
Try that with Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Right. This is what I'm saying. I mean, back then, even then, though, it had to be hard to break in.
No, of course it was.
Who introduced you?
I've got to say I had a number of people who were very generous, who were very helpful, who were extremely supportive. But probably the two who were the most supportive and helpful were Howard Bingham and Regina Jones. Howard Bingham was a photographer who was shooting. He was an African-American photographer who was shooting in Los Angeles and actually all over the world. He had become Muhammad Ali's photographer. But before he was Muhammad Ali's photographer, he worked for a little newspaper, a little black arts and music and politics newspaper that was started by a woman named Regina Jones and her husband Ken Jones. Ken Jones was a newscaster for, actually he started I think at Radio KGFJ, which was an AM station.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went from there to Channel 11, you know, in Los Angeles, and then he went to CBS. But in 1968, he and his wife started this small newspaper. newspaper, they believed that young black kids would buy something that talked about and celebrated black musicians and celebrities, and so they took a chance.
What was it called?
It was called Soul, S-O-U-L. They actually ended up partnering. This was fabulous. They ended up partnering with the radio stations all over the United States. So the radio stations would get some advertising, and then in return, the DJs would talk about the newspaper and the music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Howard brought me to Regina, and Regina hired me with no experience, but I had a strong handshake and a I looked her in the eye, and I think that counts for something.
It does, and I still tell people, young kids today, it does. You have to act confident even if you aren't.
And I was a college graduate,
yeah.
And I knew how to write. She put me to work. Now, what this did was, this now gave me access. So we would get, access to cover the musicians of the day, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, the OJs, Rufus, all of these acts. And then what happened was my first corporate client was a fellow named Bob Jones at Motown Records. And Bob Jones, God bless him, he was Michael Jackson's publicist for years after, Michael went out on his own and the whole thing. Michael was very loyal. So Bob was sort of the mother hen of, the Jackson Five when they were younger.
Mm-hmm.
And he hired me as a freelancer. I'll never forget my first assignment was Thelma Houston at the Troubadour nightclub. And, I didn't know what to charge, And he says, well, charge me $50 and, plus expenses, and I'll give you a drink tip. So that's the way I started. But what that did was, again, that gave me access, because then the other people at CBS, Bell Records, which later became Arista, Atlantic Records, Warner Records, would see me out there. And this was also a time, I must say, this was also a time when I think that the musicians were more politically aware,
mm-hmm.
and understood that if they spoke up and asked for, I mean, it's interesting, people talk about diversity now. Back then, the record companies didn't have a black music department. Or they didn't have black publicists. So all of a sudden, this was on the artist to speak up and say, we'd like some representation of people around us, black publicists and photographers.
And did they say that?
They did.
That's awesome.
They spoke up. Actually, I would go as far as to say that I think some of our younger artists could take a page,
mm-hmm.
from what was happening 40 years ago, because I actually think that things have gone backwards, but that's another story.
And I know you've shot all over the world, Bruce, but are you a native of Los Angeles?
I was born and raised on the corner of Central Avenue and Imperial Highway. For people to know, that's the real South Central. It's about a stone's throw away from Watts, and that's where I grew up. I went to Verbum Day High School, which was an all-boys Catholic school then.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Whittier College and graduated with a degree in political science and sociology.
Are you still shooting?
Yes, I am. I photographed music up until 1982, 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became a contract photographer for ABC Television, and then later Time Magazine and People Magazine. Then I went into the movies, and so I've been photographing since 1982 or 1981, somewhere in there. I've been photographing on movie sets doing posters and publicity campaigns all over the world.
How do you feel about digital?
I think digital is great. I got to say, it took me, I was dragged kicking and screaming.
Me too.
onto digital in 2005, I think it was. I was working on a film for John Singleton. I liked it. I was able to manipulate the digital to make it look like film. If you go down to the Grammy Museum, you'll see the prints. All of that stuff is none of it's digital, but we did print digitally. And
how many of your prints are in the museum?
I think it's somewhere around 60.
Uh-huh.
There's
a book out by Tashin, like we were talking about.
There is a book in September. Tashin Publishing will put out Bruce W. Tolliman Soul, R&B, and Funk Photographs 1972 to 1982. And in the Grammy Museum show, we've got Rick James 10 feet tall and 20 feet, it's a 20-foot wide shot.
Yeah. We're looking forward to hearing you talk at the Grammy Museum in their speaker program. That's going to be cool. What are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about the adventure. I'm going to talk about the fact that in some cases, you look at some of the photographs and someone asked me, how would you like people to respond to the photographs? And I'll just say, these photographs are a celebration of the music, and aesthetic, a style that's gone. But for that moment, it was magic. I'd like to think that maybe I caught a little bit of that magic and was able to have a record of what these musicians did and what they had to give and how good they were. And I guess I can sum it up by saying I want people to be amazed by the photographs. I want them to remember Melvin Franklin and Otis Williams backstage with Stevie Wonder before he goes on stage. And, a young Teddy Pendergrass in a powdered blue tuxedo. Or being able to jump on the stage and dance with the Isley Brothers. So, I want them to be seduced by Chaka Khan,
yes,
like I was. I want them to hear Love and Happiness, and I want people to remember it all and smile.
That's cool. To wrap it up, this is going to be hard, I'm sure, with all the people you've met. But one story about one major artist that we all know.
Wow, yeah, that's a hard one. I've got Jackson 5 and Maurice White, so take your pick.
Jackson 5.
I photographed the Jackson 5 probably starting in 1973 and all the way up until about 1976, off and on. So I had them when they were at Motown and when they had gone over to Epic Records. And I also got to see them grow, from the concerts to being in the limo speeding away from some event or just the sheer exhaustion. But I think about the time in 1976 when they had just left Motown, and they came into our little studio. I mean, here was the Jacksons coming into our little studio at Soul, and we were shooting a cover. And they were always very supportive, I've got to say, of Soul Newspaper. And everybody came. The family came. I mean, I've got pictures of a young Janet Jackson trying to get into the picture, and her little brother or her big brother's saying, no, go off on the side. But she showed them. But here they were. I was watching the joy, all right? I was watching the excitement. And they literally, trying to keep them on that backdrop, it's a white seamless backdrop,
right,
paper backdrop that's in this case it was 9 feet wide and probably 10 feet tall or 12 feet tall, and so I had my lights and we had the music and they were, as soon as the music came on, Michael, you would have thought that someone had wound him up. He was dancing and they were doing their routines and just the joy of what they were doing. And here I was at first trying to keep them on the backdrop. And then at some point, you got to say, wait a minute, what's more important? The being on that backdrop, and the picture being perfect, mm-hmm, or just letting it rip.
Right.
And now 40 years later, who cares that they're not on the backdrop and you can see the tools and the lights,
right,
and everything else, because then you just concentrate on the people.
Right, it's organic.
You concentrate on this great musical talent that was right there, and I was able to capture that little bit of history.
That's so cool.
And when you think about it, these are some of the images that we can look at now and get a taste and a look at who these guys were. And so if I've done that, then I've done, I've done my job. And you're right, yeah, sure, I've been around the world, I've done all this stuff, But I'd say that one, a photograph or a session with Stevie Wonder at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, stuff like that,
yeah.
You know, or Maurice White at the Pyramids, you know, that
wow.
was an accident. And
for the cover of their album?
No, it was never used as a cover of the album. It was Maurice's favorite picture. And actually, when Maurice died a couple of years ago, that photograph of Maurice walking toward the pyramids in Egypt became sort of the photograph that people used or that people celebrate him.
Okay, in 30 seconds or less, what would you tell up-and-coming photographers today who are shooting well-known people?
You've got to do your homework. You've got to pay attention. Pay attention because it's all around you. Sometimes the things that you started to do might be the real answer, might not be the real photograph, and it's right in front of you. So you've got to be prepared.
So next time you're near the Grammy Museum, stop by and see Bruce's exhibit. It is amazing. It's called Bruce W. Talamon, Soul, R&B, and Funk Photographs, 1972 to 82. It will be at the Grammy Museum through August 1st. And if you'd like to hear more from Talamon, he is going to be speaking at the museum's popular An Evening With public program series, June 27th. I'm Maggie McKay.